Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, that's great. That sounds terrific. Thank you.
Break-ins in my neighborhood, and there's a real suspicious guy. It's Retrieview Circle. The best address I can give you is 111 Retrieview Circle. This guy looks like he's up to no good, or he's on drugs or something. It's raining, and he's just walking around looking about.
Okay, and this guy, is he white, black, or Hispanic?
He looks black.
Did you see what he was wearing?
Yeah, a dark hoodie, like a gray hoodie, and either jeans or sweatpants and white tennis shoes. He's here now. He was just staring.
Oh, he's just walking around the area?
Looking at all the houses.
Okay.
Now he's just staring at me.
Okay, and so it's 1111 Retrieve You or 111?
That's the clubhouse.
That's the clubhouse. Do you know he's near the clubhouse right now?
Yeah, now he's coming towards me.
Okay.
guy's hand in his waistband.
Okay.
And he's a black male.
Okay. How old would you say he'd look?
He's got a button on his shirt. Late teens.
Late teens, okay.
Mm-hmm. Something's wrong with him. Yeah. He's coming to check me out. He's got something in his hands. I don't know what his deal is.
Okay, just let me know if he does anything, okay?
Officer over here.
Yeah, we got him on the way. Just let me know if this guy does anything else.
Okay. These assholes, they always get away. Yeah. When you come to the clubhouse, you come straight in and make a left. Actually, you would go past the clubhouse.
Okay, it says on the left-hand side from the clubhouse?
No, you go in straight through the entrance, and then you make a left. Yeah, you go straight in, don't turn and make a left. Shit, he's running.
He's running? Which way is he running?
Down towards the other entrance of the neighborhood.
Okay, which entrance is that he's heading towards?
The back entrance.
Are you following him?
Yeah.
Okay, we don't need you to do that.
Okay.
All right, sir, what is your name?
George. He ran.
All right, George, what's your last name?
Zimmerman.
And George, what's the phone number you're calling from? All right, George, we do have him on the way. Do you want to meet with the officer when they get out there?
Yeah.
All right, where are you going to meet with them at?
If they come in through the gate, tell them to go straight past the clubhouse. And straight past the clubhouse and make a left. And then they go past the mailboxes. You'll see my truck.
Okay, what address are you parked in front of?
I don't know. It's a cut-through, so I don't know the address.
Okay, do you live in the area?
Yeah, yeah.
What's your apartment number?
It's a home. Oh, crap, I don't want to give it out loud. I don't know where this kid is.
Okay, do you want to just be with him right near the mailboxes, then?
Yeah, that's fine.
All right, George, I'll let him know to meet you with you out there.
Actually,
okay?
could you have him call me, and I'll tell him where I'm at?
Okay, yeah, that's no problem.
You need my number, or you got it?
Yeah, I got it.
Yeah, you got it.
Okay, no problem. I'll let them know to call you when they're in the area.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
Okay, that was the voice of George Zimmerman as he made the 911 call that night about a young man that we're going to talk about tonight, Trayvon Martin. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Center Stage. I'm Carrie Hines, your host. Happy 4th of July weekend to everyone out there. I hope everyone is having a safe one. This is Independence Weekend, y'all. And tonight, we are going to see if George Zimmerman should be set free. Get on the phone, y'all. Call a friend, call a neighbor, call a coworker, and tell him Center Stage is about to talk about the George Zimmerman trial. This is our third show where we've covered this topic. We covered the first show covered the topic, does the evidence prove Trayvon Martin was murdered? Our second show was about who is the real George Zimmerman. And the last show we did cover in this topic was the myth about the Trayvon Martin shooting. Well, tonight, y'all, tonight, we're discussing the topic, Trayvon Martin shooting, justified or homicide. That's what we're talking about tonight, y'all. Trayvon Martin shooting, justified or homicide. But before we begin, we want to remind you that the views and opinions of our guests do not necessarily reflect that of Center Stage, the host, or advertisers. Okay, y'all, looking at the phone lines, and I've got some guests I see on the phone lines, and I have some that I see I'm still waiting for. And I see one that I do not recognize because they're from a number that has not been given to me. It's a 111 911 number. So I'm going to wait and open the lines on that one because that is not a number that I was giving. But tonight, our guests tonight are Travis Schaefer. We have Mario White that's supposed to be on the phone lines, and I do not see his number or do not recognize it. So if it is, could you please raise your hand, and that's by pressing the 1 on the button. We have Mr. Paul Beatty in the building. Kay Quinn is supposed to be with us. I don't see her phone number on the phone lines. If she would, if she's on the board, press 1. Dr. Zoe Spencer is supposed to be in the building tonight, y'all. I think she's running a little late, but she did tell me that she's going to be with us. Mr. Antoine Wilson is going to be with us and is on the phone lines. And Jay Cuervo. So I'm going to open the phone lines for who I see and recognize right now, and that's Antoine's number. I do recognize, and I'm also got Paul Beatty line already open. I see. Yeah, I'm sorry, the phone lines are jammed. I see Travis Schaefer's phone line this evening, and Mr. Cuervo. I see his phone number. Did I miss anybody? If I missed you and you are a guest on tonight's panel, if you would press 1, and that will let me know that you are somebody that I'm supposed to be putting on the panel tonight. Okay, that 111 number. Good evening. Who are you?
It's Kay Quinn. How are you, Kay?
Hi, Kay Quinn. Okay, Kay Quinn is in the building, y'all. So we're still waiting on Zoe Spencer, I believe, and Mario White. So we're going to start, and we're just going to let them jump in when they get here. Okay, y'all, listen. We just heard the 911 call. Okay, that was George Zimmerman calling the non-emergency number, rather, that night of February 26, 2012, the night that he shot and killed 17-year-old Trayvon Martin. What we want to know tonight, y'all, because, you know, we're just going to go off the belief that everything that George Zimmerman said happened didn't exactly happen the way he said it happened. So does anybody on the panel tonight have a theory about what they believed happened? Has anybody established, you know, what they think could have happened? Because we know, based on the evidence, the altercation couldn't have happened the way George said it happened. So does anybody have any theories about how they think things went down that night?
I actually do. I have a theory about what happened. I actually believe everything that George Zimmerman is saying that Trayvon did to him is what he actually did to Trayvon. I believe he chased him. He attacked him. He thought he was a cop. He was personating a cop, which is a crime in and of itself. And I believe he covered his mouth and tried to stifle his screams and yells for help. And then once he silenced the baby's voice, I believe he stole his cries for help and tried to claim them as his own. That's just my theory.
That's a theory, y'all. Well, that's one way of thinking about it. Anybody else got a theory about what they think happened?
I actually have a theory. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Who is this?
Oh, you can hear me. Okay. This is Jay Cuervo right here. It's great to be with you guys. I'm sorry?
We're glad to have you.
Oh, yes. Okay. No, one of the theories I actually have, one of many, there's always a chance that, let's say, if whatever George was saying, for whatever reason, happened to be true, it still doesn't make it right. There's holes in that story. But the theory that I have is, one, it was raining that night, and as dark as it was, I know with me, it's going to sound silly, when I'm in the house by myself and it's dark and I cut the lights off, I'm running up the stairs like something's chasing me or whatever. I'm just that scared of the dark for real. So I can imagine being outside, seeing somebody you don't know chasing you has to be extremely fearful. And I believe what Rachel Jontel, Trayvon Martin's friend, said on the phone. I just feel like I have no reason not to believe her. I really related and listened to her story. And to put a loophole into Zimmerman's story, because there's 2 minutes that go unaccounted for, that Zimmerman said as soon as he got off the phone with the police, Martin jumped out of some bushes and punched him in the face. But when Zimmerman got off of the phone, there was still 2 minutes that Rachel was on the phone with Trayvon, and she said he was out of breath. I believe Trayvon ran down that dark alley. Anybody who saw the picture saw how dark it was. It wasn't well lit at all. It was raining. So that means if you're really running super fast for your life, you might be slipping a little bit. You might slip, fall, trip, whatever. I believe Trey got tired, was in the dark, thought he was safe, you know, and probably started walking a little quick. Rachel did say she heard a man, you know, reach out to Trey, or she heard Trey turn around and say, you know, get off, implying that somebody had touched him in some way, form, or fashion or whatnot. I believe when Zimmerman was told to stop pursuing Trayvon by the police, he didn't stop. and he touched him, and he got what was coming for him. And that in itself is self-defense on Trayvon's part.
Okay. Paul Beatty, do you have a theory on what happened that night?
Hello?
Yeah. Paul Beatty, do you have a theory on what happened that night?
That I do. Can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Okay, very good. So, you know, I personally think that through a lifelong perpetuation of ridiculing the black man, painting an image of black people as being shiftless, lazy, thugs, violent, just flat-out criminals, I think that the Neighborhood Watch program actually empowered George Zimmerman to go out and physically murder this young boy. Maybe not directly, but I think definitely indirectly, with the support of the community, they actually supported this effort. And so I think hands down, I think that everything, I agree with Kay in relation to the whole vice versa concept. But, you know, overall, I personally think that this entire act was supported by the police department and the neighbors within that community.
I agree. Does everybody else kind of agree that George Zimmerman really had a strong support system, the reason that he wasn't arrested earlier?
Absolutely. Absolutely. With his father being a former judge?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mother being a court clerk.
Uncle being a deputy, a sheriff. Yes, of course, definitely.
Yeah.
And I don't believe. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, I don't believe when the uncle testified today under oath, you know, regardless of what he said, that when he heard about the case, he just didn't say anything at all. You want me to believe that you, as somebody who has a part in law enforcement, didn't advise your nephew in any type of way about how to go about this case or how about to handle it? I just didn't believe that at all.
Hey, when he said he heard the TV and he knew it was George, that was, you know, he lost me right there. He didn't even know what the story was about, but he just knew and recognized George's voice. So I think he lost a lot of credibility today, period. I really do. I think, now, would everybody kind of agree with me that George probably had some coaching to come up with the story that he came up with? That his friend is, an air marshal? That's Mr. Mark Osterham, I think his name is. Mm-hmm. And then the fact that his dad was a judge, and the fact that his uncle was a cop, that there were people that probably told George how to set that self-defense story up. Everybody agree
with
that?
Absolutely.
And, Carrie, let me just make this point as well. Every call that George Zimmerman phoned in to that non-emergency 911, it was always about this black guy. And if you notice, he would always start that conversation off with, "Hi, my name is George Zimmerman, and I'm the captain of the Neighborhood Watch, and we've been having a lot of crimes in it." He always sets it up. This entire event could have been avoided if he'd have walked up and if he caught up a Chase Trayvon, whatever. All he had to do was turn to Trayvon and say, "Hi, my name is George Zimmerman, and I'm over the Neighborhood Watch, and I just want to make sure you're okay. You know, I just want to make sure you get home. I know it's dark. I have a flashlight and a loaded gun. I can make sure you get home okay." You know, I mean, just introduce yourself. Why would you chase anybody in the dark with a flashlight and not even identify yourself as who you are? I would fight, too.
Okay, it's two parts of what you just said I want to touch on. First of all, the flashlight. We're going to go back to that in just a second. But the other thing was that George Zimmerman, per the Neighborhood Watch, and I think several of the people on this phone line have had a copy of the file that I gave, so that I didn't want people, you know, not to know what we were talking about tonight and be informed. I think per the Neighborhood Watch, wasn't the protocol just to watch and observe and never to confront? Wasn't that the protocol for
the
Neighborhood Watch?
Call an emergency number.
Absolutely. And have you ever seen those signs of the Neighborhood Watch sign? They're only eyes. They're not guns.
Okay, so technically, and another thing, if we're going to talk about that, then George Zimmerman said, what was the story about the flashlight? Some kind of way he claims that the flashlight was not working. And I just don't believe that you follow a stranger that's taller than you and African-American into the dark without being able to find him and see him. I don't believe that. So
well, that was his claim that the flashlight didn't work, but he failed to say that he had two flashlights.
Oh,
and
that's right.
He
had two flashlights.
And one of the photos of the evidence, it shows the flashlight was actually turned on.
Exactly. So there was a flashlight on the ground still lit up, wasn't it?
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Wasn't that one of his keychains?
Yes.
And
say
I
what?
That even, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Oh, yeah, and I was going to say, I think the fact that even with his story that the flashlight didn't work, going back to how dark it was that night, that only corroborates my opinion that he had that gun out or had his hand on that gun prior to getting on the ground rolling around. If you know you have a gun in your arms, you're in a dark area and you're scared, you're already ready to defend yourself. Your defense mechanisms are up already.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like that already dismantles half or a quarter of his story right there. You're not going to be standing around in the dark with no flashlight just chilling. And then you already feel like somebody's, quote, suspicious. You know, he was looking for something.
Well, the fact that the story about how Trayvon even saw the gun is not even believable in itself because of the straddling position. Being so dark, it's supposed to be on the right-hand side. Trayvon's right-handed. He wouldn't have had to reach across his body to grab it. You're not going to be able to see that object in the dark in his waistband at all.
But let's say even if he did see it, there's no way physically possible that if Trayvon was straddling him with his feet, his knees up underneath Jordan's armpits, that he would have been able to get that out of his holster. There's no way. Like I saw, they try to re-demonstrate it or whatnot, or reenact it on HLN, and it just wasn't. It wasn't possible. It just wasn't possible to pull it from out of there.
I've done that reenactment as well. There is no way. I've even done it. You just can't do it. So he had to have the gun already, which is another point, Carrie, because if you have a loaded handgun and you're the only one that's following somebody, why would you be the one screaming in terror the way that scream went forth?
It is my contention that he went into the darkness of that area with a flashlight and his gun pulled. That's why I believe a lit flashlight and his gun already pulled out of the holster. That's what I believe, y'all. But we're going to go to the phone lines. I'm going to see if this is more of my guests that are showing up. I have another block number, so I'm going to come to you not knowing who you are. Good evening. Welcome to Center Stage. Good evening. 111-1111. Good evening. Okay. I don't know. Somebody else has another number that's not showing up. I'm coming to you. I've opened your phone lines, but obviously – if you're not supposed to be on the panel tonight and you already have pressed 1, press 1 again, and that will take you off the panel if you don't have a comment. Okay, we're going to go to 716-715. Good evening. You're on Center Stage.
Hey, Carrie. How's it going? It's Chris.
Hi, Chris. How are you?
Good. Interesting trial. I think the article that Charles M. Blow wrote about this is very – very good. I'm posting this on a Buffalo Bullet now because he's talking about logic versus legality. And whenever you get a situation like this, especially having to do with race, they're going to break it down and logic no longer matters. It's all about what they want you to believe. And it's going to, if it gets their type of verdict, it's going to be legal, really. You know? So that's the tragedy about the whole thing. Nothing that you know, this is really an open and shut case. It really is. It's open and shut. Okay.
Well, you know, I have to disagree with you because has anybody else been paying attention to the fact that Florida law has something on the books that says that I can be the aggressor and start an altercation with you and I start losing, and so therefore I can pull a weapon and shoot you and kill you because I felt that I was in fear of my life being taken from me, so therefore I have a right to defend myself and I can kill you even though I was initially the aggressor.
Absolutely.
It depends on what you're being the aggressor about.
Meaning the aggressor, meaning that I came up to you and I started something when you were not starting anything with me. I came up to you and I started, you know, the problem and it became physical. And at some point, then I became in fear of my life. So then I took yours.
Mm-hmm.
Then that law shouldn't apply then. No.
Yeah, Paul Beatty, was that you that just jumped in and said you are aware of that law?
Absolutely. You are 100% correct, and that's why I agree with your caller. It is an open and closed shut case, and this is the reason why this man is going to walk scot free. And every individual.
Please don't say that.
Unfortunately, I don't want to say it, but you know, I'm a realist in this whole situation, and when you use reason and logic. All the, one of the things that George Zimmerman has to do is all he has to do is present reasonable doubt to the jury. Remember, his defense is self-defense.
Mm-hmm.
In the state of Florida, all he has to do is produce that he was attempting to defend himself and that he felt like his life was in danger.
Wow. Wouldn't that apply also to Trayvon?
I think it would apply to Trayvon as well, even to stand your ground in a sense. And also, I'm thinking the judge more than likely, if I don't think he'll get scot-free, my honest opinion, professional opinion, I'm thinking they might go with a lesser charge of manslaughter, still giving him at least 30-plus years maybe. I don't think I can see him walking away from this scot-free because the judge was real quick to deny that acquittal today, if anybody saw that.
She was really quick to deny that acquittal. Yes,
and I don't think he's getting out here scot-free. I don't think she's going to have another – she doesn't want to be the judge to have like a Casey Anthony, OJ type of thing on her hands. Not saying it's up to her. I mean, because, of course, if you know it's up to the jury, you know, at the end of the day, indefinitely. But I don't see him walking away scot-free.
Well, the evidence is not there. The state just needs to present it, or should have presented it, in the manner in which George spoke it, basically, and that would in itself disprove his claim of self-defense. And he also has to prove was death, was that an appropriate measure based on that circumstance, and it's not. So he also has to prove justifiable force.
Mm-hmm. Right. I think two things that the defense has really yet to prove is, one, how did Trayvon really start the fight? I mean, I'm not really – there's so many loopholes with that. One, he jumped out of the bushes. The other one, he was 15 feet away from George and came charging at him. The other one was George was walking to the car and turned around, and he was coming towards his way. There's no consistent story on how Trayvon started the fight. And the second thing I really want to know is, if George was really screaming for real, why did the screaming immediately stop when the gunshot went off?
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And those two things that they've yet to really prove, and I think the prosecution really they surprised me as well. They surprised me today when they came back with a rebuttal argument after the defense tried to put their argument out there for the JOA, you know, for the judgment of the acquittal or whatnot. And I think the prosecution, because I've criticized the prosecution throughout this whole trial in the sense of not going as hard as I think they could, but I'm thinking what they were doing was kind of saving maybe somebody's stuff for that moment to, like, present their case kind of at the end. And I'm hoping for the best that when the defense presents their case and the prosecution has to cross-examine them, that this is their time to shine, to cross-examine those witnesses and expose those loopholes in Georgia's story. You know, because, like, when you lie about something, there's only so far you can really stretch your lie. I think everybody in the phone can agree that they're not going to put Zimmerman on that stand. They know better, and they've already submitted about 4 or 5 testimonies on Zimmerman's behalf from the prosecution's trial. You know, Zimmerman's not going to get on the stand, but the prosecution can still try, I mean, to present that evidence. Because even like the judge said today when she denied the acquittal, you know, that's part of the reason why I don't think he's going to get off scot-free was the fact that she did say that there's still some evidence out there, circumstantial evidence. They don't have too much direct evidence, but there is a lot of circumstantial evidence, especially considering Zimmerman is the only witness that really was there throughout the whole event. And let me ask you this.
Was there ever anybody who could prove or establish that Trayvon Martin ever even hit Zimmerman?
The only witness was Don Good, which I don't even find him that credible anyway. But he's the only one that saw that he saw hand motion. Well, he's the one that originally said that the person on top, Trayvon, was hitting him MMA style, and then he recanted the story saying he saw a downward motion of hands, and he couldn't say it was hit. So he saw a lot within that 8 to 10 seconds. That he claims he was out there, and he wasn't all the way out there, and it was pitch black. And the thing about that surprises me with his testimony is he wasn't so sure on a whole lot of stuff, but he can actually see the lighter skin on bottom compared to the skin color, but he can't see anything else. And I don't know how you would be able to see that in pitch black darkness and not see anything else.
A lot of that too, Carrie, is going to depend on that conservative. Let's hope it's not of complete conservative jury, but there isn't any black person, man, woman on that jury. But what we know is, if we're going to attack someone, Trayvon didn't even bother to end the call. That lets us know that he wasn't in attack mode. The baby had Skittles. And he has some tea, and he's talking on the phone. If I'm going to get ready to do battle, and I'm going to be aggressive and attack someone, I'm going to end the call. Mm-hmm. And then force with force, you know, now they want to say all of a sudden Trayvon, he was armed. Now he armed himself with the sidewalk. That very same sidewalk was also available to George Zimmerman. So
did
I
he really
just don't
arm
see
himself with it or
well,
just
see,
use
that,
it as a defense
all
mechanism?
All of that based on fear. That's all based on black fear. A sidewalk is a weapon now. You never heard that.
Yeah, who knew? Who knew? So
okay.
We walk down the street, we're automatically armed now.
Oh, yeah. So,
okay, y'all, and I'm going to come to you in just a second, 661. Let me establish something, y'all, since y'all talking about the sidewalk. If somebody was beating somebody to death with the sidewalk, and George Zimmerman claims Trayvon was using the sidewalk to beat him with, shouldn't those injuries have been just a little bit more severe?
Not oh, Carrie, come on.
Shouldn't there be blood on the sidewalk, right?
I first heard it was in the grass. So how is it? Was it in the sidewalk or in the grass?
Suppose
you know what?
The grass and Trayvon had some X-Men mutant powers and grew extra arms and was
apparently
holding his mouth closed, beating his head on the sidewalk, and reaching for that gun.
Well,
you know, here's
the
theory. I think George Zimmerman beat himself on the head with his own flashlight and hit cracked himself across the nose so that he can appear to have damages and then wipe the flashlight clean. That's why there's no fingerprints on it, because they want to claim now that the rain could have wiped away the fingerprints. It didn't wipe away the fingerprints on anything else, only this flashlight. Everything else, the print's intact.
And you know what?
Exactly.
I think George Zimmerman's father told the police to put a couple of cracks on his head.
Exactly.
And it looked good. That's what I'm thinking.
But,
right.
The one thing that's missing out of George Zimmerman's statement.
Let me say, so I want to jump in here because this is a very important point. Has nobody paid attention to the photos of George Zimmerman's face that night but me and noticed that only the one with the bloody nose shows that his nose looks swollen? The other pictures that were taken just an hour or so later, because the bloody nose photo is one of him sitting in the car, in the police car that night. But the mug shots were taken once he got to the station, which was allegedly still the same night. The nose is not swollen.
Mm-hmm. No,
it's a tiny little scratch
on his nose. Just a tiny little more. It isn't even significant, like the doctor said. What about George Zimmerman's phone records? They checked Trayvon's phone records. They didn't check to see who Zimmerman called immediately afterwards. I mean, where are those phone records?
Do you have the
evidence that proved that somebody said they saw him on the phone?
The first one that was out there, he claimed that George was immediately on the phone, and I believe it was probably to that U.S. Air Marshal friend of his
friend.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That drove him, picked him up from the police station and all that. But one thing that's missing out of George is detailed as George Zimmerman's statements are to the police in reenactment, is the one thing that's missing is him claiming that he defended himself or put any type of defense up prior to shooting Trayvon. He's trying to put this pitiful image of this poor defenseless creature out there, like he was just laying there getting beat, and that's missing from his statements. I mean,
and not only that, on the very next day, you're ready to go back to work. You got class, you're ready
to
go back to work. Who does that?
To get a doctor's excuse.
But you know why he was so easy to try to get up and just continue to his life? He didn't know, and this is so sad in my opinion, because he said it, they said it in a testimony that supposedly he didn't know the boy died. I think he knew that Trayvon was killed. I think he didn't know Trayvon was, quote, an innocent boy. And when they let him know, like, this boy wasn't breaking, and he wasn't doing nothing, you killed an innocent man, that's when he was just like, oh, shoot.
Well, you know, he definitely knew that he shot him because...
He was so ready to tell the story the next day, like, yeah, this is what happened. The suspect, I got the bad guy, this whole lingo and frame of mind. And he was so cooperative with the interviewers. It was like he was going to tell his story, like, yeah, I did like a cop did, like a child.
Yes, impersonating
it was
a
scary.
Cop. Mm-hmm.
That whole one cop thing. One thing I won't disagree.
Now, you remember there was one witness that arrived later on after Trayvon had already been shot. And George had told him what he did. And when the police arrived, they called. Zimmerman asked the guy, the witness, to call his wife.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. He gave him a cell phone. He calls his wife, and he says, "Your husband here is he was involved in a shooting." And George shouts and screams, "I shot someone!" Okay.
Just tell him, so he knows. Mm-hmm.
He knew
what he did out. Let me go to area code 661748. Good evening. You're on center stage.
Yes, ma'am. Hello?
Hello?
Hello? How are you doing, ladies and gentlemen?
Good. How are you?
Hello.
Fine,
good. How are you?
Fine, thank you. I've been listening with tremendous interest. I don't agree with one single thing you said. I think this man is utterly innocent of second-degree murder. The prosecutor.
We're so glad to have balance in the conversation. Tell us why.
Again, I don't think the prosecution has presented one single iota, jot, tittle, or atom of evidence that George Zimmerman is guilty of second-degree murder. And I was a police officer 28 years in Illinois state policeman. I've tested innumerable times at trials and in court. I've seen innumerable case in this. Out of any major case I've ever seen, this is the most inept, worst prosecution ever.
What?
Ever.
Wow. Well, I don't think that you have established why, though, sir.
I have a question for him. I really do have a question for him. This is Kay. I just want to ask you, sir, in hindsight, after you've murdered someone with no criminal history, no history of aggression, of course, now, Zimmerman has a history of aggression. Let's not forget that. But after you learn that this is just a 17-year-old boy with candy and tea and nothing else and on the phone, and he's a good kid, basically. He's not the thug you thought he was. After you've learned that, and then you still say, I don't have any regrets. I would have done the same thing again, which means all of our children are in trouble because he would do the same thing, so he didn't care, and it's God's plan. Mm-hmm. You don't question the innocence of someone who actually feels like that. You don't think that's a depraved mind to even say, I mean, at least say, you know what, I messed up. I feel so bad. In hindsight, maybe I should have introduced myself. Maybe I should have approached the situation different. But he says none of that, sir. He says he would do the exact same thing. He has no regret. And you don't think that points to guilt at all?
Madam, you said quite a bit. And, you know, I'd like to respond to each and every single thing you said. I trust you will give me an adequate time for response.
Okay, starting now. The clock is ticking.
All right, fine.
Go ahead.
Fine. Now, you use the term murdered, which is precisely what is in contention here. He certainly has not been convicted of any murder yet, but you did use the term, and I suspect that's a bit careless of you to do so. We don't know yet, legally, whether he murdered this boy or not. Number two.
We know he
Slavo,
did.
We know it's a homicide.
Yes, now, it's homicide. Let him finish. Not murder. Madam. Homicide is a killing of a human being. All homicide is not murder. All homicide is not murder. Murder is the unlawful killing of a human being. He has not been convicted of any yet. There's no doubt, I think, that he committed a homicide. I'll never argue that. He certainly did. Whether it's murder is precisely why we have trials, to prove someone guilty beyond a reasonable doubt of that crime. Now, you said Trayvon Martin had no criminal history. That is factually incorrect. He has.
No, it's factually correct, sir.
No,
the officer said it when they came in and showed him. They couldn't even identify him because he had no history.
Ma'am,
he had no record.
That was testimony from the court itself.
Let him finish.
May I respond? Don't
confuse the school history with criminal history.
No, that's what he's doing. That's exactly what he's doing.
Wait, let him finish.
Madam,
I did not want the stage to be a night that we did not present balance in this show, so I definitely want this young man to make his point.
Okay. You said no criminal history. I didn't say you didn't say conviction. You said no history. He has a juvenile criminal history. He does. I know the difference, the distinction, because I arrested juveniles. I had to testify in juvenile court. He has a juvenile criminal history. To include
can I say something right here? Then let me just. What was he criminally doing that night that he was shot and killed by George Zimmerman?
Now,
what was he criminally doing?
Am I going to get a chance to respond? Because you keep asking questions. I'm prepared to answer each and every one of them. But you got to let me respond.
But we got to move pretty quickly, so go ahead and
you asked a specific question. And that, what was he doing criminally? George Zimmerman saw him doing nothing criminal. Nothing. Not one single thing George Zimmerman reported to the 911 dispatcher was criminal at all. It is not criminal to walk in between buildings. It's not criminal to look in buildings. It's not criminal even to look like you're high or on drugs or something, as Zimmerman said. So the answer to the question is he did. Apparently, he was doing nothing criminal. However, given the fact that
You're going to lower your voice, sir. I don't like that tone.
All right. Given the fact that George Zimmerman was trained by the Sanford Police Department, as they testified in the court, in watch captain, being a watch officer for Community Watch Association, and the fact that on, I believe, six prior occasions, his observations led to arrests and convictions.
That's incorrect.
That's very incorrect.
That's false.
Okay, we have the file, sir. So, understand that anything you say, we factually can check it because we do have the file. That's not correct.
I will give you the site. He has been commended
for
that.
Do you have the file, sir?
Yeah.
Do you have a copy of the file before you challenge us on that?
The city manager said so in a public statement. Napoleon, what's his name? Forget his last name. His name is Napoleon. His city manager said that this man was trained by the San Francisco Police Department, and he has, in fact, cooperated the Sanford Police Department in observations leading to arrests and convictions. Now,
that contradicts testimony.
I challenge that number.
Can I go again? I was trying to answer specifically your question. We got sidetracked here. If you let me, I will deal with specifics of that in a moment. But nothing.
Tie it up in a moment because we got to move on. We got some other callers we got to get to. Can you tie it up in a moment?
Trayvon Martin was doing was criminal. However, in context, given the rash of burglaries, and if you look at the size of the community and the number of burglaries they had in recent weeks, it amounted to a burglary epidemic.
They had seven burglaries in 2 years.
Given the context,
that's not a rash of burglaries.
It was.
He's wrong too. Because the person that was already arrested that was doing the burglary, and Zimmerman knew that.
Got to move on. Let him finish, sir. Okay, sir, you need to wrap it up. Your point is what?
Given the context of it all, then it was perfectly reasonable for George Zimmerman to single this young man out, given the context of his behavior, and let the police sort it out, which is what he was attempting to do.
You get out of your car and you use a flashlight and stick it in my face and you point a gun at me. That is not waiting on the police to do anything.
That's
taking the law into your own hands.
That
I beg to differ with you, and I'm going to move on. Good evening. 239-243, good evening. You're on center stage. 239-243, good evening. You're on center stage. Okay. Okay, y'all. And young man, I hope you understand. I gave you a lot of time to make your point, and I just don't know that you made it. We're going to. I have a question for you all. I want to understand if it's raining outside, and I think the defense attorney Wes said it best today. He said it was raining outside. Remember, they were checking the weather pattern, and they said it was raining hard. Some people said it was sprinkling, and some people said it was drizzling. But all of those had occurred within that day. So we can kind of agree probably, y'all, that the grass was wet and the grass was probably muddy if you were swerving in the grass, as George Zimmerman said that he was. That established How is it that the back of George Zimmerman's clothes, where he was doing all this swerving in this grass with Trayvon Martin, never had a grass stain and it never had a mud stain on it? Can anybody answer that? Answer what?
Well,
can you answer
say
that?
It had Sorry. It was wet
Sorry,
and then
me?
It had grass clippings on it. So that,
I didn't
about
hear grass. Where'd you? I never heard grass clippings.
Yeah, they did say he had. One of the detectives said his back was wet, and then it had a few pieces of grass on it. But then remember, Carrie, they actually did roll around. So you know they have quite a few people that have said that. So.
Hey, yeah, I don't.
But it's. I mean, you got to realize if you've been rolling around in wet grass. Especially in a scuffle, you're going to have grass stains, not just a couple of pieces of grass on you.
Exactly, exactly.
Okay.
Say what, Travis? Especially with the jeans that George Zimmerman was wearing. Anytime you wear blue jeans, you can see dirt and debris in those. I mean, they don't just fall off. The jacket that was a rain jacket. I'll give credit there as far as maybe not no grass being on it, you know, after a while. But the blue jeans should have shown some dirt, some debris, something.
Exactly.
Also,
he was on his knees holding Trayvon's arms back, away from his body. So that established that his knees have been wet as well. I'm just saying, y'all. We're going back to the phone lines. Area code 469-556. Good evening. You're on Center Stage.
How you doing, girl?
Fine, how are you?
Well, I've got peace of mind. You know how I am.
Well, you know what? That's all that's important. Y'all, that's David, also known as Meatball. David, what do you think happened tonight? David told me at some point, y'all, that he thinks that Zimmerman is going to walk. David, tell them why you think Zimmerman is going to walk.
Well, why I think Zimmerman is going to walk is that I'm an old guy that look at wisdom and knowledge and just from what the laws in that state is, they go by the laws. They don't go by how people feel. Now, if you want to know my feelings on that, and I'm going to tell you my feelings because, you know, Carol, I'm point blank. I believe in speaking in Proverbs and Psalms. That's a short statement that's directly to the point. If you ain't one, don't portray one. Because, see, if you look like a hoodlum, both of my pistols in my pocket start turning to flips when I see you. So if you ain't a hoodlum, don't look like a hoodlum. If you ain't what you ain't, don't look like one. That's what my grandmother taught me when I was a pimp. She told me, my big mama told me, if you ain't a pimp, don't look like one. I told her, I'm a pimp, big mama.
What about if you're not a cop? Don't act like one.
That's fine, and that's good, and I'm okay with that. But what about the assumption?
Don't look like a hoodlum.
Wait.
Like a hoodlum. If you ain't a hoodlum, don't look like a hoodlum. I tell all of my grandchildren and my sons, both of my sons.
I have a hoodie myself, and when I'm exercising, if I was exercising and it began to rain, I would pull my hoodie hood up. I don't see a problem with that.
And now that makes you a hoodlum. That makes you a hoodlum
because I have my hood on my hoodie.
Listen close up. Check it out. Let's talk about a hoodlum that we're forgetting about, George Zimmerman, okay?
Exactly.
George Zimmerman has a track record, okay? A lot of y'all white apologists out there are forgetting about this. George Zimmerman has had run-ins with police himself. He's got an attitude problem. George Zimmerman was recently fingered by a young lady as having grown up molesting her. And the young lady says that George and his family have habitually made racist remarks over the years, okay? Now, that's a hoodlum that we need to be concentrating on, all right? Everything else is just circumstantial, all right? But this guy has a track record of hoodlum behavior and a deep-seated attitude problem. That's what we need to remember.
The reason is because he's always able to get away with it.
Can I interject?
You can't control the perception of you.
Okay, go ahead, Corvo.
Oh, yeah. I want to interject real quick. I wanted to go alongside who just finished talking.
this is getting back to racial profiling. When you say a hoodlum, mm-hmm. I feel like if you were white and you were wearing a hoodie in the rain, walking to the store, walking back, you'd be judged. And this isn't nothing against white people. Love white people. Got white people in my family. It's nothing like that. Just I'm like, it's just calling it how it is. And you said you point blank. Let's be point blank. Trayvon Martin, 17-year-old black, on the phone, walking to 7-Eleven to get some Skittles, iced tea, and come back. We have evidence. We've seen his family. We've heard him speak on his behalf. I saw his brother today. He's a college student, mother, college graduate. Trayvon, 3.7 GPA on his way to college to learn about aviation. Nothing about that speaks hoodlum. And you know, you're saying, like, you know, don't dress like one. He was dressed for the weather. It was raining. He wasn't going to go out there in no basketball shorts and a, you know, a wife beater, run to the 7-Eleven and come back. What you expect him to wear? He was going to, you know, I mean, an umbrella would have been nice. Maybe he could have defended himself better. But, you know, he thought about wearing a hoodie. He went to the mail at Rachel's side,
yeah.
Can I just say two words?
I'm a 19-year-old biracial son, and he wore a hoodie just the other day in his summertime out with shorts. So, I mean, I don't understand the clothing aspect of a hoodlum, you know, because you can't control one's perception of how you look. Because you can't wear what you want to wear for them to have always going to view you.
If you look like a hoodlum, I'm going to tell you what, Nick, brother, if you look like a hoodlum, you're a hoodlum. If you look like a
hoodlum. So if you look like a hoodlum, you get treated like a hoodlum. Otherwise, meaning you get killed and it's justified. I
well,
like that's
Carrie,
the argument
please,
being made.
Can I just interject? Does anybody remember Professor Gage who was, wasn't dressed like a hoodlum, just trying to get into his own home and was.
Mm-hmm.
Do we really, he didn't have on a hoodie.
Yeah, black boy sticking the key in your own house. Yeah, I agree.
Exactly. Remember him? He was not. He didn't have on a hoodie, so it doesn't matter about what so much what you put on. It was just the assumption that Zimmerman made about Trayvon. He just assumed that he looked suspicious and just assumed that he was up to no good and got to be on drugs or something. You know, it was all of those assumptions, and every one of his assumptions was wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Exactly.
Just like with, the word hoodlum is relative. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's all there is to it. We can't forget that. Anybody black can be considered a hoodlum.
One of the things that we got done, and we cannot get away from opponents, is in the eyes of the American people, and the fact that black men, black people in this particular country are viewed as criminals. If you wear clothing or articles that perceive you as a thug, you are subject to random violence.
I don't believe that.
Well, it's true. It's true. Regardless of his 3.7 GPA, it's true.
The
fact of the matter is, we as black men are subject to random violence and stops by police officers simply because of the clothes, cars, and our demeanor, which is a major problem within this society.
Mm-hmm.
Now, again, I go back and I talk about this whole night watch program or the neighborhood program. These particular people, see, this is something that we don't understand. They understand the concept of I am my brother's keeper. When I'm patrolling this neighborhood, I have to protect my brothers and my sisters from these thugs and these criminals. Well, guess what, people? The thugs and the criminals look just like you and me. They have skin tone that is a dark hue. And anybody who don't have lily white skin or high brown skin are considered a threat.
And I have to agree with, I really did, after looking at this file, and several of y'all have had an opportunity to look at the file, it almost seemed like this neighborhood felt like they needed to gather around George like a brotherhood would, and that they had to protect him because he was protecting them, they thought, the night that situation occurred. This is really my belief, that a lot of them initially gave statements based on trying to protect George and keep him from getting in trouble because they believed George's story initially. I really believe that. And so according to the Neighborhood Watch, if anybody has the file and can pull it up, they had something from the Sanford Police Department that was issued to people who had Neighborhood Watch programs, and it basically said you are like your brother's keeper and that you should watch out for each other and look out for suspicious people. And if you do come upon a suspicious person, that you should call that non-emergency number, you know, call the police. So technically, George was doing everything that the police, the Sanford Police Department, had said to do. He just overreacted to a situation. And another thing that was never entered into evidence that I had a problem with, they talked about Trayvon Martin's toxicology report, but no one ever talked about what was George Zimmerman on that night. It is
exactly
George Zimmerman was taken to Mazapam and Adderall.
Yeah, he was on Dracone. It sounded like he was on something.
Those drugs cause hallucinations. They cause mood swings, right. Agitation, aggression. And so all those could have played a factor in how he saw that particular situation that night. Somehow, why is it that the defense did not put that in the evidence?
And apparently,
but we're talking about
father,
the toxicology report today about
the
Trayvon
defense
Martin.
The defense didn't put it into evidence because the prosecution didn't want, because that would open up to Trayvon Martin's toxicology report too, and the jury isn't aware that there was supposed to be some trace amounts of marijuana in his system, so they want to try to make him out to be this thug, so they didn't want, you know,
they
him tainted in that regard.
Right,
it wasn't before the jury. Exactly.
Or was it? Okay, gotcha. Okay. So, but you know, another thing, George Zimmerman's cooperation with the police. Now, y'all, listen, I ain't never committed a crime in my life, but I guarantee you, if I had just shot somebody, I know enough about CSI and all the other stuff that I need to call an attorney just to make sure that I don't get hung up, even if I didn't feel that I was the person
exactly
that caused, you know, the situation
right
to happen. Why in the world was George Zimmerman so cooperative with police, given all those interviews and all those reenactments? What fool would do that? Unless they
well,
thought
he was
thought
one
he
of them.
He thought he was doing something good and apprehended a suspect.
He thought he was one of them because he freely went to that police department and got free range. He could walk around. He can go in there and, you know, and hang out with them. He really thought he was a police officer, which is a problem that I have with him impersonating a police officer, because that in and of itself is a crime there. You cannot personate a police officer, and that's exactly what he was doing. And if the person caused harm or injury to another person while he is personating a police officer, that's a felony in and of itself. So I don't understand why the prosecution didn't come harder, you know, as well as they should have. But he thought he was one of them, and he had them to cover his back, you know, the good old boy system in full effect. That's all that is. And he just felt that. He was very confident.
I think George Zimmerman was a wannabe cop who had failed to get on a police department, and I think he treated that neighborhood, because he was a neighborhood watch captain, like his police beat.
Self-appointed,
really,
mind you.
Yes, right.
I think he patrolled those three streets like it was his beat. I really do. I think he was in a fantasy land about being a cop, and he was carrying a gun. They said I understood he carried a gun every day, everywhere he went, except for when he went to work. And I thought, what?
Well, you know, he was full of false authority. And understand, his father was a judge, a judge magistrate, and. What happened, Zimmerman is charged with murder, but he should be charged with first-degree murder, okay? The minute he disobeyed, this is the one thing, he did not listen to everything the police told him, because the minute that dispatch told him, you need to stay away, you need to back off. And he, because if he had done this, we wouldn't be talking about this right now. We'd be talking about something different, okay? That's the whole matter, all right? At some point, this guy briefed that order, took it upon himself, and even George can't even get his story straight. You know, one time he says he ran, and another time he says he walked away. All right?
Mm-hmm.
So
then he was skipping. Don't forget he was skipping.
Exactly. Yeah, he was skipping.
Okay.
Oh, Hannity, he said he was skipping, right? Why did he give Hannity an interview? I mean, why would George Zimmerman get on Hannity before he ever went to trial and give a statement in New York? Who does that?
It's the delusion of grandeur, the affinity. He wants to have that recognition. It's that whole delusion of grandeur. Yeah. Like, not only am I a cop now, I'm like that cop.
And that's why he stands up when someone testifies. You know, he stands up proudly when they ask to identify him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he stands up extremely proud, like sitting there bowing his head.
He's proud of what he did. He's very proud of what he did.
Well, I mean, and I think he made that very clear when he said he wouldn't do it any other way. And I wanted to touch on what he was just talking about, though, saying about how when the non-emergency dispatcher told him to back off and back away. This is the problem. I will agree with the first caller that the prosecution has made is allowing these loopholes to stay loopholes because they have to prove beyond a reasonable doubt. And so the biggest thing is, you know, his argument is, well, I did walk back. But the biggest thing is, Georgia, that would have been it took you 2 minutes for you to walk back to your car. How far did you risk run? And apparently to you, you weren't running away from your car. He said Trayvon ran away and he walked after him. And it was just the wind blowing that he didn't run after him. Why were you that far away from your car? Who walks that fast? Who has that big a stride? Then the story changed to him.
But didn't notice after the officer, the dispatcher told him not to follow, didn't he still sound like he was winded, like he was still running?
Nothing changed.
Notice that when he was doing the reenactment, he was at the end of the walk at Retreat View Circle, and he was still on the phone with dispatch, but never gave the address.
Because there wasn't an address on that building, and come to find out, per Serino's testimony, that building actually did have an address on it.
No, but that was the reason why he said he continued to walk through.
But he was at
the other end, and he was still on the phone with dispatch, and he still never gave the address.
He did not want to give an address.
He wasn't going to be there when they got there, more than likely.
Exactly.
Right.
And bear in mind, like they said, that whole neighborhood only have three streets, and one of them is a circle. It's a circle.
Exactly.
And you live on one street,
right,
so you only need to know one.
By the clubhouse.
And you're the neighborhood captain, and still know the
neighborhood. He wanted to be the one to catch the guy. Listen, if you just tuned in,
you come center stage tonight for the topic, Trayvon Martin shooting, justified or homicide. We're discussing the courtroom drama, y'all, the witness testimony. We're going to get into that now, y'all, the witness testimony, the Hannity interview George Zimmerman did, the defense versus the state. Who's winning? George Zimmerman's reenactment. Why did he do it? What was he thinking? It's just so much we're going to cover tonight, y'all, and we're down to under our second hour, so we got to get busy, y'all. We want to talk about witness testimony. There were some very interesting witnesses. I like Rachel Gentile, but I saw the social media sites lit up, Twitter lit up when she got on. I think she was unfairly crucified after getting on that witness stand. Does anybody have any explanation for why Rachel Gentile was not prepared for court?
You know what? If I could just speak to that just for a second. Rachel Gentile, take this in. She's 19 years old and about to be a senior in high school. For most people, that's a freshman in college. Okay.
Right.
So, I try to tell people, listen, she's doing the best she can, or she did the best she can, because we don't know her struggle. We really don't.
Exactly.
But apparently there's a struggle there. But that just goes to show that Trayvon, he didn't discriminate against who his friends were, because Trayvon was a 3.7 GPA.
One thing I like about Rachel is she was definitely able to hold her own against Don West.
And
that spoke volumes. She didn't go for his tactics, and she really put him in his place the best that she could, and she wasn't having that. So I give her props for holding her own against Don West.
But black people need to understand.
I don't mean her English had to be perfect, because, you know, you are who you are. But I think in terms of knowing how to address the judge, knowing how to address the defense or the state attorneys, and yes or no as opposed to yep and nope. Those are simple things. I think somebody should have told her, be prepared, this is the way you need to do it. Why did no one from the state get with her on that? That's all I'm saying. You know, how she testified and what she said.
How do we know nobody did?
Oh.
Hey, Carol, I got Carol wants to make a comment.
Okay, Carol, how you doing?
Oh, I'm doing fine. I did listen to the girl's testify, and
Rachel Gentile.
Yeah, mm-hmm. There were a lot of inconsistencies in her answers, and then I know you're saying that she wasn't prepared. I feel that they did prepare her to the best of their ability. This girl, to me, was a slow learner, special ed, or something like that. She's very literate. And so she came across, at first she came across kind of, well, I wouldn't say hostile, but, you know, just her demeanor. And some people might say the demeanor is not important, but the demeanor is important when you have people ask you questions and people observing you. To me, she wasn't a, I know she was talking to Trayvon, but to me she wasn't a very good witness, but they had to put her on.
Mm-hmm.
But and I'm glad when the other black people got on the stand to talk, it showed them as very intelligent. But this girl looked real bad to me.
She was not in her element.
I want to interject real quick. One of the biggest things that she was criticized about was her inability to articulate herself. And as an English major, I find it bad that, and this isn't to you, but this is in general, the people that criticized her, they judged her intelligence based on her ability to articulate, and I don't think that's a fair cause, because she actually speaks four languages. English wasn't her first language. She spoke Haitian,
Creole, Spanish,
and then, you know, English or whatnot. And then, of course, with her age, 19, being a senior, there might be a chance she might have an IEP. Like, again, we don't know her struggle. We don't know why she's there. The school system, you know, clearly looked bad on the school system, and like she said off the record that Trayvon was the only person that was nice to her, didn't judge her off her appearance, or her ability to speak and this, that, and the third. Her mother doesn't speak English as the first language around the house. She speaks to her mother in French or Creole around the house, and her father's from the Dominican Republic. And so, you know, I'm not going to say that she's not intelligent because she couldn't articulate herself. When they had a man up there today, you know, Dr. Bao, he was all over the place, broken English, where he got his master's degree, and he's a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know,
mm-hmm.
I don't think it's fair to do double standards when it comes to African-American youth, especially.
I'd like to come in. In that regard, she felt like, the whole society felt like that wasn't her element. She was out of place. She didn't belong, which is the same way Zimmerman felt about Trayvon being in that neighborhood, didn't belong.
As
black people have got to stop doing that. We did the same thing with Gabrielle Giffords when she was out winning the Olympic gold, and they were talking about her hair. Listen, we have got to get above that. I think she made her point. And I hear people saying
that
they really believe
that she was on the phone with him, Trayvon was afraid, and that Trayvon was in fear of his life, and he was being chased by Zimmerman. And she also established the fact that Zimmerman approached him, and that Zimmerman possibly hit Trayvon first. So all of that was established. Yo, let's go back to the phone lines. We're going to pick up area code 240-351. Good evening. You're on center stage.
Hi, Carrie. This is Zoe.
Hi,
yes.
Zoe. How are you?
How are you? I'm good.
Listen, what do you think so far?
I've been following the discussion. I've been in and off of the phone lines, but I wanted to jump in on the conversation and about Rachel Gentile. And I really think culturally we really have to be careful about the way that we brand people who don't speak articulately and the way that we define what is valuable, what is meaningful, especially as far as her testimony is concerned. Witnesses are not always going to come with the King's English. They're not always going to come from a certain class background or a certain academic background. And I think we need to get beyond that and be able to look at the substance of what an individual is bringing. And I think I think that's Jay, who definitely made a great point. She really took it home. She hit the key point. She did what she was supposed to do. She was a witness to the fact that she was on the phone with Trayvon, that he indicated to her that someone was following him, that the person initiated contact. They never broke the phone call. And you all were discussing earlier about whether or not this should be an open and shut case. The biggest thing that the defense has done is they established the break between the initial contact and then the point of altercation, which is crucial, because if they would not have established that break, then it would have just been over. It would have been open and shut. He should have been in jail. But because they established that break, Rachel Gentile's testimony becomes key, because she's the one who's saying that there was no break, that there was a constant following menacing, there was an aggression, and that it didn't break, and Trayvon wasn't the aggressor. And I think that's where her testimony is really, really key. And I think that we as Black people need to get away from, you know, minimizing her testimony because she didn't articulate it in an academic or a scholarly way, and really support the fact that she really gave key evidence and she stuck to her story. She didn't bend. And, I mean, I just celebrate her.
I wholeheartedly agree. Though,
you know what?
I really do.
I
agree with you. And you know what? Speaking of Black folks who can articulate and can't articulate, let's talk about Captain Carter. You know, they kind of branded Rachel and said, well, she wasn't this and she wasn't that and she couldn't talk this way, she couldn't talk that way. But when our brother, Captain Carter, got on the stand, did he represent or did he represent? are y'all following who I'm talking about, the professor? They call
I had
Captain
a friend of mine. Carrie, I had a friend of mine ask, how many of those sisters that adjusted your bra strap when he got up and took the stand?
I know I did. I mean, he was articulate. He was well put together, and they couldn't shake him about the fact I teach criminal litigation, and I taught within that class. I covered stand your ground law, and also cover self defense.
Mm-hmm.
Self-defense. And so looking at him and the way, you know, and he was still smiling, hey, George, how you doing? And at the same time, he was killing George with his testimony. He absolutely killed it. And so what I thought he established, in my opinion, was that George Zimmerman was not truthful, when he went on Hannity's show and said he never knew about Stand Your Ground until after the shooting. I
you know he even laughed after he said that. He couldn't even say that with a straight face. He was like, no.
And he also established that he went extensively into the topic of self-defense as far as going on YouTube, pulling videos down, going frame by frame, freezing the frame and saying, listen, this is how a situation can be fluid. You know, it can be here 1 minute and then the next minute, you know, in this next frame, this person moved or did this. And so, therefore, the whole situation or the scenario has changed and now it's this. Which
and
I
described him as being one of his better students. He aced that course, so he was one of his better students, so he got it.
I think, too, though, that really is the point, and, you know, it goes back to Jontel's, her testimony, because in self-defense first and Stand Your Ground, because there's two things operating simultaneously in the trial, he's claiming self-defense, but then there's the Stand Your Ground clause, and initially, before a quote-unquote break, because we all know that no break happened, but before the break, Trayvon Martin, understand your ground, would have had a right to stand his ground, and that is really what the law is intended for. If someone aggresses you, really it's supposed to be in your house or in your car or in your business, but in Florida they extend that to the street, that if someone approaches you and that you feel you're in fear, you have a reasonable fear that they're going to pose a danger to your life or to your safety, you have the right to use deadly force. So in the beginning, if Trayvon if what they say is true and Trayvon had slammed George Zimmerman's head into the sidewalk when George Zimmerman was the aggressor, Trayvon would have had a right to use deadly force because he feared for his safety. The man had a gun, whether it was drawn, whether it was on his side, he probably noticed the gun. So he had a right to defend himself. But that's the reason why the defense has been so dead set on establishing that there was a break and Zimmerman was walking away or he was doing something else. He followed him and then there was a break and he was walking away and then Trayvon aggressed him because that break stand your ground for Trayvon and then it also invokes George Zimmerman's right to self-defense. And I think I'm hoping in the closing argument that they talk about meeting force with force because, Carrie, I think you said it earlier, just because you get your butt kicked, that does not mean that you get a chance to kill somebody. It's supposed to be meet force with force. If I'm beating you up with my hands, you have a right to beat me back with your hands. If I'm beating you with a board, you really can't take a gun and then shoot me because I'm hitting you with a board. It's supposed to be force with force. So,
but isn't that why the defense entered into Trayvon used the sidewalk as a weapon?
Yes. Right.
Desperation.
Yes.
That's what I'm thinking. I'm sorry.
Trayvon called.
Remember the other
Trayvon
weapon they
rain also. He called the rain to come down.
Okay. And y'all, let me establish something, because I'm going to forget this if I don't bring this up. Something that really agitated me very, very badly about this case. Someone brought into question the fact that a Slim Jim was found near Trayvon's, where Trayvon's body was found 4 to 5 days later, trying to establish that, therefore, maybe Trayvon Martin was about to break into somewhere.
But, you know,
and
they dismissed that. They said it was part of the neighbor's roof. They dismissed that. The neighbor said that was part of his roof that fell off, like it was a little part of his roof or something. Like, they dismissed that. But it was sad
not
that they tried to plant that on that
water. Not before the defense tried to get it in, though.
It was sad
they
tried to plant that
like
that.
They tried to get it in there.
And I feel like that was real desperate of them. That shows when you have to lie for your freedom, it just shows how desperate the defense really is. Not saying the defense isn't doing a good job at what they're doing of defending their client, but that was real desperate. I'm trying to plant that on Trayvon, trying to attach that extra image of a thug to him.
But you know what, though, with that, one of the callers was speaking about it earlier. It is easy for a jury or people who are not in the struggle or people who are not in the African-American race. I mean, if you think about Sean Bell, Amadou Diallo, Oscar Grant, Romarley Graham, if you think about all of the many, many cases of unarmed black men who have been murdered, either through the use of Stand Your Ground, Castle Doctrine, or police officer-involved homicides, the way that they get off is because they are able to convince the jury or the court that a black man represents fear, period. So, for example, even with Sean Bell, you know, the officers got off because it was believable that when Sean Bell went into his pocket or when he reached, oh, I thought he was reaching for a gun. And because of the stigma against African-American men being just rightfully thuggish, or they're thuggish or they're criminal by their gender and by their race, it really is easy for the world to conceive that, oh, he may have had something, or, oh, yeah, we can imagine that he had. So even them invoking that, even though it gets dismissed, and this is the thing about court, you can say something as an attorney and then somebody objects and then a judge overrules it or sustains the objection. But whatever you plant it, it doesn't go.
Yeah.
Just because you object and you win the objection, it doesn't leave the minds of the jury. And so establishing things like that, you know, begin to put an additional stain on an already stained case, because Trayvon, I mean, really, for real, if y'all think about it, and then y'all could jump in, I'm sorry to hog the mic, but Trayvon is more on trial than George Zimmerman is. Trayvon's character is more on trial than George Zimmerman is.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree with that. And, you know, and the sad part about it is there's times when I'm not a lawyer by any means, but there's times I wanted to jump up and say, defense, come back and say something. Don't let them close with just saying some of the things that they're saying. And I thought there were many missed opportunities for the state. I thought there were a lot of times when they let the defense say things that really were hurtful to this case, and they did not come back. They did not counter, which, you know, I had a problem with. But the next one is I want to talk about, y'all, but before I do, listen, if you have a question or a comment tonight and want to chime in on this subject, get on the phone lines. The phone number is 347-850-8390. If you got a question, a comment, suggestion, any of that, get on the phone lines tonight. Call us up at 347-850-8390. Okay, these phone lines are moving. 239, I've come to you several times. Every time I open up your phone line, 239-243, you don't say anything. So I'm not sure if you're raising your hand or you don't understand how it's all operating. But if you do not choose to speak, if you would take your hand out, that means you just press 1 again, and it will remove you off the board as far as asking to say something. Also, 661, I'm going to come back to you just because I want to show balance tonight, but not right now. Best friend, I want to talk about the air marshal. Mark Osterman, in my opinion, with friends like him, who needs enemies? I'm sorry. I don't know if he called himself helping George or hurting George. Did
he
anybody
wrote
get to
a book?
Off of his memory. He didn't take one note. He wrote a book. Did anybody have a problem with his testimony? testimony.
What
was your problem with his testimony?
My problem was he lied and said that he did all of it off of memory. Nobody does that all off of memory. George and you had it. If you're as best friends as you talk about or whatever, the best friend you ever had, all the social networks, smartphones, this and that, you had to have contact with him more than just once. Talking about he basically trying to downplay his book on the accuracy of his book or whatnot. I think for George's benefit, and this is, but it really wasn't working. I just did it off my memory and this and the third. I mean, other than that, for real, I mean, like, he was a good witness, I think, for the prosecution and the defense.
What about when he said Trayvon Martin grabbed the gun?
Yeah, that, to me, when he was speaking, the state should have stepped up and been like, you know, it's just speculation,
right?
Because you weren't there, number one, and apparently George only told you this one time. So it was a lot of speculation outside the scope. I mean, with him, he was a less than credible witness, and it showed more of George's inconsistencies. What I hope the state does is just show as many inconsistencies on George's part where he would have to take the stand, but I really don't see that happening.
I want to say, can I jump in, too?
Sure.
I think I am still stunned, and I've been sitting waiting. There's a lot of things that I've been waiting for the prosecution, and I am not an attorney. I'm just a sociologist. But I'm still trying to figure out what the rationale for that was. He really served a great purpose for the defense because basically he became George Zimmerman's testimony. And what I had a problem with is that, I had to actually go and look up hearsay and, you know, what the hearsay rules are, because when he was speaking, the way that he gave his entire testimony without any objection was as if he were on a fly on the wall observing everything that happened. He said verbatim what he thought or what he's testifying George Zimmerman said, because I don't believe George Zimmerman told him all of that. But the way that he was talking was like he was standing there watching everything unfold. And so he was the voice of George Zimmerman. Now you don't even have to put George Zimmerman on the stand, because this man gave a blow-by-blow testimony of what George Zimmerman said, and then you can't go back and really cross-examine George Zimmerman because it didn't come from him. So I really didn't understand the prosecution strategy on that, and if there's a lawyer anywhere on the panel, I'd like to know, you know, if they have some ideas. But I thought it was detrimental to the state, and I was scared because I thought that after that, in addition to all of the other pro-George Zimmerman witnesses that the state called, I was concerned that the judge might grant that motion for acquittal.
Well, you know, Mark Go ahead.
He definitely knew more than what he was putting on and tried to show it in George's name, because the thing is, this is who George called probably right after the shooting. He was there at the police station, and then and his wife went to stay with him, you know, for weeks right after the shooting and hide him. So they had more than one conversation about what actually went on, and he, like I said, tried to downplay it. Like, that was just that one conversation, and he was basing off memory, so it won't make him look as credible as trying to make George look more credible.
I think this man was taking buckets of water as he was trying to describe that gun being grabbed. I mean, when they start to challenge him, and what did you say in your book about the gun being grabbed? And he said, well, I said, first he said the motherfucker word, yeah, I'm just going to call it what it is. And then he said, well, you know, he said that, but the man said, well, is it that in the book? Well, yeah, it's in the book, and then they go to the book and it's not in there. Well, then the publishers took it out. You know, did you forget to tell him that part? I mean, when you were telling the story, and even with the gun, I think he grabbed the gun. Oh, well, it may have been the holster. Well, I don't know. I just assumed that's what he was talking about. You know, how do you write a book? How do you write a book and find a publisher who's going to publish some junk like that when you don't have all the evidence per you? You were just going off memory. It was just, I thought his testimony was just crazy. I thought his sweating profusely up there told the story that he was in a hot seat. He just was not being totally honest. Okay, y'all, we're going back to the phone lines. We're going to go to area code 352-293. Good evening. You're on Center Stage. 352-293. Good evening.
Hi, how are you? Are you there?
Yes.
Hello.
Hello?
Yes. Yeah, how you doing? Can you, yeah, how are you?
Okay, fine. How are you?
Just great. I'm sorry. I think I was that other person that was, I was on a different phone. For some reason, when you would come to me, I was talking and I could not hear you, so I apologize.
Okay, okay.
But,
you've got a question or question?
Yeah, several things, very quickly. First of all, and this has already been said, Trayvon Martin is not on trial. And even before I say that, I want to go way back and say, you know, that that police officer who called in, is if there's ever such thing as an Uncle Tom, well, you know, I won't say that. Let me just move on. The problem with this whole case, the real culprit in this case is not the prosecution. It's really the police. The investigation that was done was not adequate. When Zimmerman was approached, first of all, when the police officers approached the crime scene, if everything happened the way that George Zimmerman said it did, the police would have heard the gunshot, and they would have approached the area with their guns drawn. So there's something wrong with that whole thing. Anyway, but they got him back to the police station, and you can see on the video that they're laughing and joking with him. The interrogation was a joke. The reenactment was a joke. One of the things about the reenactment is that he wasn't challenged. Now, if you look closely, you see where he's doing the reenactment at the T intersection, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now they're asking him. He's explaining how everything happened. But if you look at the crime scene, you'll see that the pictures where Trayvon's body is 50 feet down that sidewalk. That's where his body was found, along with Zimmerman's other flashlight. And his and some of his other belongings, and then Trayvon Martin's phone was 10 feet further back from there. So the biggest witnesses in this case, because you're talking about the witnesses, the 911 call, because it's that's Trayvon screaming.
Mm-hmm.
The number two is Rachel. I don't think there's anything wrong with her testimony.
Mm-hmm.
I think all this other stuff is a smokescreen about her demeanor and all that.
Exactly.
Because people watch Law and Order and these different TV shows, and see, they think that that's how, you know, court really is. But when you get in the courtroom, and I've been in some courtrooms, my family, I come from a family of attorneys. So
okay.
I know a little bit about how more realistic the courtroom is. And see, you know, it's very easy for people to look at her and make judgments about how you should act and how you should. But if you don't have any experience in the courtroom dealing with judges and law enforcement, there's a lot of things you don't really know. And I do believe that they probably could have prepared her a little bit better, but that's another thing. But the biggest witness is Zimmerman himself.
Ooh.
And because his story is not consistent. If you start from the beginning and walk all the way through, there are several inconsistencies. I would not underestimate, someone just made a comment about his friend getting on the stand.
Mm-hmm.
No jury, well, let me put it this way. If I'm on a reasonable person on the jury, and I'm assuming that these women are reasonable,
mm-hmm.
they're sitting there, and yes, they see his friends coming in there and telling his story, but what they want at the end of the day is they want to hear from George Zimmerman himself. Now, if they're thinking, they see George Zimmerman going on Fox News, they see him talking to the police, they see his friends getting up there, the question in their mind is, well, okay, well, we want to hear from him. And I think that if George Zimmerman, this is a self-defense case. If you have nothing to hide and you can go
exactly.
on Fox News and talk to Sean Hannity, you should be able to get on the stand
exactly.
and tell your story. If that does not happen, I think that this jury is going to hold that against him.
Can I just interject real quick, because he made a very important point that I just want to pick up on. When you notice George Zimmerman, because they said they handcuffed him right away on the scene when the police got there, they put him in handcuffs. And then they put him in the car, and then they walk him into the police station. Please, I don't know why no one is picking up on this, but please look at how neatly tucked in his shirt is. You can see his belt buckle. He does not depict the individual that has been in the fight for his life. His shirt tail is not even untucked. I mean, he is neat and confined. I just don't understand why they haven't pointed that out. That is not the picture of someone that's been fighting for his life.
I tell you something that was very powerful is the testimony from that, I don't know if she was not the medical examiner, but the forensics lady, the Indian lady.
Dr. Rose?
Yeah, she wasn't playing no games. She wasn't playing no games up there. They tried to discredit her.
Did you notice how immediately the internet lit up with all these things, about all these stories about how she washed her feet in the autopsy bowls? And I mean, I don't know, just all these stories.
It wasn't happening.
Who cares?
They were talking about stuff like that
about her and how she had done unnecessary autopsies and things like that. It was like immediately they realized how crucial she was to this trial, and they immediately tried to discredit her.
She said that those injuries were insignificant, which was the truth that we knew from the beginning when we saw him coming in the police station on the police video.
But, you know, I think to counteract that, unfortunately, the defense got Dr. Carter or Mr. Carter or whatnot to say that you don't have to have life-threatening, you know, injuries. I feel that your life was in danger.
But as unfortunate as that is,
I wanted to say, though, that should also apply to Trayvon Martin, who has no injuries on his body other than the gunshot wound and the abrasions on his fist.
But from the standpoint of a person on a jury, when you hear somebody say that the injuries were insignificant, then again, they're going to want to hear from George Zimmerman about this fight for his life that he had. That's a contradiction. If he was fighting for his life, but he only had minor injuries, and he had a gun, and he took MMA lessons.
Zimmerman is not going on the stand. I mean, I'm pretty sure it'll be something that the jury will take into account. But that is the reason why his friend was so imperative, because the defense would be asinine to put him on the stand. I know he's not going on
I think them losing that motion today upped the ante for them to put Zimmerman on the stand.
I think they knew they were going
to
get it.
I think
he's going to have to get on the stand. I'm calling it. I'm saying he's going on
the
stand. I doubt it.
Anyway, good night.
Didn't Dr. Rowe also establish the fact that Zimmerman could have self-inflicted those injuries on himself?
Yes,
there's no doubt in my mind that a conflict ensued. It's more so, in my opinion, how it went down. You know, it's like if you approach somebody and, like, get your tail beat. I mean, go let the person live and file assault and battery. You don't get out and shoot them. I mean, don't bring a gun to a fist fight. That's an old saying. We all know that. You know what I'm saying? You don't bring a gun to a fist fight. Shoot somebody in the heart like they proved today. They proved that the prosecution ended really strong when they said how he pointed that gun at his heart. It's not like you shot him in the leg or in the arm or something. You point at his heart. You have the intent to kill. And they got Serino, the detective, to prove ill will, intent, and spite.
Let's go to the next witness, Serino. Did Serino kind of establish that George may be a little crazy when George was talking about the video, when Serino tried to bluff him about maybe somebody's got a video, I think somebody's got a video that shows exactly what happened, and George says, oh, yeah, I hope it does, too. You know, I was hoping that somebody had one. Did Serino kind of establish that George may be a little crazy when he said, I thought either George was being very honest and truthful or he was a pathological liar?
Right.
Dropped the ball with Serino because this was their opportunity to blow everything out of the water, and they didn't. And I think Serino had kind of explained it, too, because he said that he didn't really get a chance to do a challenge interview with Zimmerman before the case was yanked from him. So O'Mara was claiming it was a challenge interview, but Serino was that really wasn't a challenge interview. That was just a tip, you know, and the case was taken from me. But the prosecution really had an opportunity to really take that to such another level, and they failed.
I think Serino was a weaker witness than Rachel because he led the defense towards in his mouth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when he was talking to the state, he sounded strong. But under Cross, he did seem like his story started to unravel a little bit, or he wasn't as strong with the defense as he was with the state. Yeah, let's talk about the 911 call.
Officer witnesses, Reno.
Say what?
Officer Singleton was a stronger witness for the state than Detective Serino.
Yes, she was. Let me ask you all this. On those 911 calls where the screams are heard, let's be clear. If George Zimmerman says his mouth was being smothered and his nose was being smothered and his head was being banged and he was losing consciousness, how the heck can you scream 14 times in 38 seconds without being interrupted?
Can I jump in real quick? Because I wanted to link that point to the point that was before. You know, I don't necessarily think that there was a fight. If he did not inflict those wounds on himself, it is possible that he tried to grab Trayvon. And, of course, I'm speculating, but that he tried to grab Trayvon. He may have tripped. Trayvon may have kicked him in the face trying to get away from him or what have you. It's obvious on that 911 call. I'm hoping that the jury hears what everybody, you know, who wants to hear Trayvon's voice hears. That is an adolescent. I mean, it sounds like a prepubescent boy screaming.
Yeah.
And the fact that it just ends after that gunshot is absolutely telling. It's absolutely telling.
And then you have Zimmerman stating that it doesn't even sound like him.
Oh, he did. Yeah. At one point, Zimmerman said,
I think
he told Serino and Singleton in the interview when they played it for him, he said, that doesn't even sound like me. Zimmerman said that. Those are his words. So let me ask y'all this. That established, if you pay attention to the testimony today, the defense today, I think it was Omara who said the fight probably lasted 20 seconds. I don't know if anybody heard that but me. But he said the fight probably lasted 20 seconds. Well, that said, if the fight only lasted 20 seconds and George Zimmerman was getting the heck beat out of him with his mouth and nose being smothered, you know, he's taking punches to the face and his head is being banged on the concrete, even though no DNA evidence was found under Trayvon Martin's hands or on his clothes that established Trayvon ever even touched him. But that said, how is it if the fight only lasted 20 seconds? Was it that George Zimmerman was able to scream 14 times in 38 seconds and never was interrupted? It doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
Can I say my theory now?
Sure. Sure.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Okay, Antoine, I want to hear your theory.
My theory is that I don't believe any punches were thrown at all. I think this was a grabbing and shoving match, and that's why it ended so quickly. We're flung to the ground. I think Trayvon landed on top, and I think George Zimmerman still had him grab like tightly. And somehow Zimmerman got to his gun and shot him quickly. It all happened really fast. Nobody had time to think. Nobody had time to talk. It ended just like Gentile heard it end, that Trayvon said, get off. Because I think when George Zimmerman first ran up on him, he was out of breath. The first thing that George Zimmerman did was grab him, because he didn't want him to get away. You know, this was his chance, this was his opportunity to catch the people that have been burglarizing his neighborhood, and he's like, well, I'm going to get this guy, so he grabbed him. You know, and that's what Trayvon said, get off. And
is that why the bullet hole is underneath the button? Is that why some kind of way that button didn't take a hit to that bullet? Because George Zimmerman had a hole to the hoodie and some kind of way the shot was able to go underneath the button?
I think he had a hold on him, yes. That's why he was yelling for help.
He was pulling the shirt away.
And also, Carrie, too, even with the fact that the medical examiner testified that it was a direct shot from the chest. I've had the unprivilege of seeing autopsy photos and crime scene photos. I would pretty much bet my life that at the point that Trayvon Martin was shot, he was not on top of Zimmerman. I doubt seriously that they were even on the ground. I don't think that they were on the ground. I think that they were standing, and the way that he landed with his hands, I've seen that position before, with his hands tucked under him, is the direct shot to his chest. It's a crucial traumatic injury. You're just going to fall.
George probably pulled his hoodie away from his body trying to catch him. They said his hoodie was not touching his skin, so he's probably pulling at him when he shot him.
Right, and they were blaming that on the Arizona tea can in his hoodie, saying that Trayvon was leaning forward.
See, the sad thing is everybody's already accepted Zimmerman's story of events. That's what I like in the sense that we slightly branched from that, in the sense of like they were probably standing, which makes way more sense.
Well, no, you had one witness that did say that the one that was got up was the one that was on top. So you had a witness that actually testified that, you know, the one that got up was the one that was on top. So she saw that.
Yeah, but that wasn't exactly immediately after the shot. That was maybe a minute or so afterwards. He went around to the front of his house and came around to the side.
No, she said after the shot, and the one that was on top got up.
By the time that he got outside, though.
No, she's talking
about
a different
talking about a different way. We have like three witnesses that said they saw Zimmerman on top, and they kept asking the witnesses.
That corroborates with Zimmerman's story, though, when he said he got on top of Trayvon to spread his arms out. But everybody knows he found Trayvon's arms underneath him. How'd you get on top of him and spread them out?
Why is that the case? Why is that the case, y'all? Why? Nobody ever explained that. How is Trayvon's body found with his arms underneath him and his hands beneath the body? But Zimmerman says, I had his arms pulled away from his body. That no one ever explained why
That's because it didn't happen that way. And again, if Trayvon is on top of Zimmerman, then Trayvon and Zimmerman shoots Trayvon. And it's the same, you know, they want to talk about the blood flow, and they want the blood flow to go down in Zimmerman's throat when you're talking about his so-called broke nose. But then they all of a sudden want the blood that comes from, you know, busting arteries, major arteries, that it just soaks up in the inside of Trayvon's sweatshirt, and Zimmerman doesn't get any blood on him at all. If Trayvon is on top of Zimmerman, then when he is shot in the chest, he falls forward and he lands on top of Zimmerman. And then if Zimmerman gets from under him, then it's probably more likely than not that Trayvon would have been found on his back as opposed to on his stomach. And
back
the second thing, too, with the movies, you know, every time we see movies, you get shot and then your body goes back and you land on your back. Well, in real life, if you get shot in your chest and, you know, you're not dealing with some kind of pump shotgun that has a whole bunch of, I don't know what the name of it, but force, that's going to push you back. That really doesn't happen. You get shot in your chest and your body begins to shut down. And it, not even the recoil. I'm talking about the force of the bullet. Like the force of bullets don't push people back into the wall when they get shot. That's the movie. In real life, you shoot somebody and they drop where they get shot, especially if it's a fatal wound or debilitating. They call it a kill shot. It's likely that Trayvon crumbles, and when you crumble, you drop to your knees, and then you drop forward.
That's when George got on top of him, and that's where the witnesses saw that he was on top.
He had already been shot. I think that this is just my opinion. I think that George Zimmerman may have gotten on top of Trayvon after the fact, but I think that at the point Trayvon was shot, based on the medical examiner's testimony, and I was mad that they didn't get more into trajectory, because you can, when they do autopsies, they put the metal prong through the entrance wound and out of the exit wound, and then the angle of the prong tells you what the trajectory is. If the trajectory is like a parallel trajectory, there's no way that Trayvon was on top of him or Zimmerman was on top of Trayvon, because there's a different trajectory than a parallel trajectory. I think they were just both standing up, and I think Trayvon was trying to get away, and I think that he pulled him and shot him in his chest, cold-blooded.
And I want to touch on that real quick, something real interesting. Dr. Bao, he talked about how he wasn't an expert actually with, like, bullet wounds or whatnot, and he talked about his source or his reference book or whatnot. It's a book that was written by a man who's supposed to be a witness for the defense's case, who wrote a book in regards to the situation and is a gun expert or whatnot on these type of wounds, which is interesting in my opinion. It's about to, this case has so many type of loops to it, it just almost doesn't make sense. And like you said, they missed that key point on trajectory.
Well, let me ask you, since we're talking about the next witness, Dr. Bao, did he help or hurt the defense today?
He almost seemed
like a hostile witness. I mean,
he was not
going to let anybody get away with saying that he did anything wrong.
Yeah. I just think it was more awkward than anything. I think it was just awkward.
You think it was awkward? Was he effective?
I think the points he needed to get out got out. He got the points out that he needed to get out, in my opinion, about how long was Trayvon alive afterwards. And he said anywhere from 1 to 10 minutes. That was his final statement. But we all know the police arrived on the scene maybe a couple of seconds after the shot, and Trayvon was pronounced dead on the scene. Then he also said Trayvon couldn't hear. Let me go there.
What was so crucial about them making the point about when the car arrived on the scene and when the cop actually got to where Zimmerman and Trayvon were? What was so crucial about that today? What were they trying to establish?
I think the defense was trying to establish Trayvon possibly could have crawled, he could have spoke, this and the third, because they were talking about why was the body so far, but
it's in my opinion.
You were trying to collaborate towards their story, basically. And he even said there was no way Trayvon could have spoken. And Zimmerman made it sound like a Looney Tunes Bugs Bunny show when he said, you know, Trayvon got shot and was like, you got me, or something like that.
Yeah,
who says that other than, like, Daffy Duck or somebody? Nobody says you got me when they get shot for real. Especially you got shot in the heart and the lung. You know what I'm saying?
I think, you know what, that was Zimmerman's attempt to sound like what he thought a black man would sound like if he was in that position. That's all I can think of, because it sounded ridiculous.
Hey, Carrie,
like, homie or something like that. Who says
homie
anymore?
We got three questions.
Somebody said Carrie what?
We got three questions.
Okay, we're listening. Okay, go ahead.
Well, the first question was to your panel, how much money do you think the state of Florida would expect to lose in the event George Zimmerman is found innocent? Another question, where was Jesus throughout this whole process? And the last question was, what is it that the white man have to do beyond a shadow of a doubt that shows he does not like you? And those are the three questions that came from the group to your panel.
There's a group out of Dallas that's listening in and chiming in tonight, y'all. Any of the panel members want to pick up one of those questions or all of those questions?
I'll take one. I want to give the question on how much money does the state of Florida expect to lose, because I think that is pivotal to this whole situation, and I want to talk about it real quickly because Florida is concerned about preserving the Stand Your Ground law, because the Stand Your Ground law and the Castle Doctrine are intended to be neo-lynching laws that are designed to allow ordinary white citizens to violate black lives specifically, or the lives of undesirables, so that the police don't have to do the dirty work. That's the bottom line. So let me say that the amount of money, because they have their riot folks already, you know, on deck. They're doing their training and, you know, preparing in case Zimmerman gets acquitted of the charges. But the bottom line and the most important thing is that if Zimmerman is convicted or if he's acquitted, whatever happens becomes a matter of case law and it becomes precedent that now you can go back and you can draw on that in the future. So you trust and believe that the state of Florida, and that's the reason why they offered, let's go all the way back to the beginning, that's the reason why they offered Zimmerman up in the first place, because when the natives got restless and we were all protesting and wearing hoodies and carrying Arizona iced teas, and then the question started to arise about, hold on a second, let's challenge the Stand Your Ground law, they're like, oh, hell no. Oh, we don't want to deal with that. Either Stand Your Ground or Zimmerman, and they threw Zimmerman underneath of the bus. Nobody wants to prosecute him at first. So, I think we have to go back, and that's the reason why I'm still, you know, looking at the prosecution, because nobody wanted to prosecute him. And that case went through a lot of hands in the DA's office before it landed in his hands. So, I think how much they're prepared to lose, I think that it's irrelevant to them as long as they get to preserve their neo-lynching law. That's what I think.
Wow. Travis, you were going to pick up one of the questions.
What was the second question? I want to make sure I didn't mishear it.
Where was Jesus? Is that what y'all said, group? Where was Jesus?
Yeah, that's the one I wanted to answer. I think you'd have to ask George Zimmerman, since this is all God's plan. So I think he would have to answer that.
That was a good answer. And after we forgot what the third question was, group.
The third question was, What would the white man have to do beyond a shadow of a doubt that shows he does not like you?
I'll take that one, y'all. If they find George Zimmerman guilty, that would prove it. That would be making it very clear that we are in trouble and that the black life has no value whatsoever. That would be my answer.
Well, I can tell you from a Caucasian, myself, and I'm Caucasian, I would be very disappointed and angry if he is found. With the evidence presented that I know of, I would be out there as far as if he's found not guilty.
Travis is going to get the picket sign and come out there too, right, Travis?
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, because that's ridiculous. I mean, there's plenty of evidence. There's a lot of, it's not so much, like I said, you know, I didn't base my opinion off the race so much because I didn't even look at that factor at first. I just basically took George's reenactment statements and his testimonies and depicted it. And from there, I was like, this man's lying. And there's no way this could have happened. There's no way that could have happened. And from there, I just went through and, like, you know, he murdered.
Can I say something? Can I say something real quick? Because I always love when we're talking about cases and when I have the opportunity to speak to my white brothers and sisters. And I think that is really, really crucial. And I don't know your name, but I'm just going to call to your consciousness really quickly. I think that it's really, really crucial that we begin from all racial perspectives to keep race on the table, because we are here having this conversation simply because a black man in American culture is considered a threat to America. And this is historic. This doesn't just start with Trayvon Martin. This has been going on since the first Africans arrived on the shores of the United States in 1619, that we have been conditioned as an American people, both black, white, Asian, Indian, whatever nationality, to fear black men. And it is the fear of black men, or the criminalization of black men, that lends people to react. And I think that we have to stop ignoring or acting as if race isn't a factor. And I think it's important for everybody across the board to begin to be honest. You know, it's not about you're racist if you understand it, or when we talk about race, we're racist. I think that we become a post-racial America when we acknowledge the significance and the detriment that race has on the psyches of a people, where we can't even acknowledge that. Let me tell you, if Trayvon Martin was a blonde-haired, blue-eyed white woman, and the exact same thing transpired between Zimmerman and this 17-year-old college-bound, blonde-haired, blue-eyed white woman, there would be a whole different sentiment nationally. She would never, ever have even been considered a threat. So I think we got to keep race first on the table, and we definitely have to keep gender on the table as well. So I'm hoping that, you know, when you get your picket signs, you know, we can deal with the larger issues.
I agree. Y'all, listen, we're going to go over the 10 o'clock mark just a little bit tonight. So, warning, if you're on the computer, Let's see, how does it go? If you're on the computer, you're not going to be able to hear the show after the 10 o'clock mark. So you need to get on the phone lines. We have about 50 phone lines available. We're going to go over just a little bit because I want all these intelligent folks to give us some closing arguments tonight. So we're going to have to go over just a little bit. So a warning, if you're on the computer at straight up 10 o'clock, you will be disconnected from the show. So what I'm saying to you is get on the phone lines. You have to call us up at 347-850-8390. You don't have to say a word, but you have to be on the phone lines in order to continue to hear the rest of the show. Okay, that's a warning. So at 10 o'clock, if suddenly we're still talking and you don't hear us anymore, it's because you're going to be cut off at 10 o'clock if you're just listening via the internet. Okay, we're going to go to Reality. That's what's showing up on the phone lines, Reality. I'm coming to you. Good evening. You're on Center Stage.
Hey, how's everyone doing tonight?
Hey. How are you?
How are you doing?
Hello.
Yeah, actually, I kind of chimed in a little late, so I'm just catching up, listening, everything, and I want to be in a chat well on the air before I get kicked off. So I just want to get caught up before I make any comments.
Okay, you have any comment or question?
Not at the moment. I just want to get caught up so I don't want to change the subject. I want to be on the same page as everyone else. So
Okay, got you.
I'll be here.
Okay, gotcha. Okay, so y'all listen. So here we are. You know, we thought that they were going to rest today. We thought the defense was going to rest today, but they didn't. So, you know, I really don't know if I feel like they should be closing. Do y'all think they said enough so far for them to close out now? Or is there still more testimony that you think they maybe need to bring in?
No. I think they need to bring in. Go ahead.
You think they should bring in what, Travis?
I think as far as the state, they definitely should have not have closed today. There was plenty more that they could have brought in as far as the, basically go over and analyze every single statement, the reenactments, the recordings. They could have explored those to a whole nother level before closing out.
Okay. Zoe, you said they should or should not close?
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely not. I think that, one, if Dr. Bao, because he started off really, really strong for me, and I was like, yeah, and then it was like he got a little bit passive in not wanting to be the expert that he is. I mean, he deciphered, fact and opinion, but he, as an expert, is qualified to give a medical opinion. That was one. That was the problem that I had in the past with the prosecution allowing so many people who did not have any medical expertise to offer opinions about where they thought they were in reference to bullet wounds and blah, blah, blah. I thought that the defense came back and kind of shook a little bit the credibility as far as how the evidence was taken out of the fingernails, and because Dr. Bao was unwilling to talk about it, if I were the prosecution, I would have called the tech in, and I would have called the medical examiner in, the chief medical examiner in, so that they could explain their process to the jury, because otherwise the jury is left with kind of this question. Even if they believe Dr. Bao is good, the defense did a good job in kind of bringing out questions like, dang, you used the same toothpick to do all five nails. No one was able to talk about the fact that you're dealing with an accumulation, and there may not be transfer, and that this is the practice and this is the policy. And I think the fact that Trayvon didn't have any wounds in his hand, and that Trayvon didn't have any of George Zimmerman's DNA on his hand or in his fingernails, was too crucial for them to have just left Dr. Bao out there. I think that they should have called the tech in, and they should have allowed the tech to explain what their process was so that it would be very clear to the jury that they followed protocol and what they found was very valid. That's right.
Well,
okay,
to that point, they all
the
have witnesses. I'm sorry, Carrie, but to that point that she's saying where they should have called in witnesses, both sides have witnesses on a list that they've already agreed to on either side. So they can't call in someone that's not already on the list to testify because once you get someone on that list, they have to be deposed by the other party, by the defense. So they can't just come in now and say, okay, well, they raised this question about the only using one little stick, then let me go and get this up. They can't do that because now you can't.
Saying prior.
Yeah, but I think you – but if there's something, I mean, I don't, and I'm not an attorney, and if you are, I will definitely.
No, by no means. I am not, by no means. I'm just saying they can't go back now because of the questions that are raised.
No, but they can't just go and call somebody immediately, but they can say that if something is introduced in trial that needs clarification, there's no such thing that you just have a witness list and you have to stick with that. The problem is, and I think the issue that you're talking about is that, well, if they haven't, if both sides haven't had an opportunity to properly depose a witness, that the prosecution couldn't say today, okay, well, we call the tech to the office.
Exactly.
Or the tech
exactly.
to the stand today, but they can request that that person be placed on the witness list and then go through the proper channels to ensure that they're able to testify. So just because they weren't on the original list doesn't mean that they can't call them at a later time. They just have to go through the process of being able to do that.
I think they really should have called in someone to clarify the plastic bag protocol, because that really, I think that really tainted the state handling of the evidence, because if you guys remember yesterday, the technician with the DNA stated that the wet clothes and things like that are supposed to be air dried and put in paper bags.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy today testified that they were individually put in plastic bags where moisture can come in and mold and bacteria can come, you know, form on that stuff. And ultimately, the defense was trying to say, get out that. The evidence, probably the DNA was probably tainted because of the improper protocol. So one of the technicians should have came forth, because they were trying to get the testimony of the technician out of this medical examiner, and he's telling them, look, I'm not qualified. That's not my job. My job is to inspect this body and determine cause of death. Anything mm-hmm. outside of that is not my job.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
Well, you know what? I think let's go back. I think that expert was an FBI. Was he FBI? I think that was Anthony. Was it? No, his name was Anthony Gorgone. I think is what his name was. The DNA guy. You know, excuse me. This is the way I feel about that evidence that they were trying to get disqualified or make you know the jury question whether or not it was something that could be considered not tainted. If you're gonna say some of the DNA applies, then all of it applies. If you say some of it doesn't apply, then none of it applies. But you cannot pick and choose, well, you know, because this got wet or that got wet, then you all didn't handle it right, so therefore disqualify that and keep this in. And that's the game that, in my opinion, the defense
mm-hmm.
was playing, and the
mm-hmm.
prosecution let them get away with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean,
exactly.
Well, if you say it's raining, so therefore his hands, the DNA must have washed off of his hands, but at the same time, everything else that's in evidence is okay.
And it didn't
you know
wash off of George's head, and he's standing in the rain, but it didn't wash the blood away from his head.
Right.
That was just ridiculous. I mean, some of the things, it was just like so many opportunities that the defense was just sitting there like they were just numb or zombies or something, and we're not paying attention. It was just so many opportunities, I thought, that they could have came back on a cross and said, hey, listen, let me just say, you
uh-huh.
know, either we're going to believe everything or we're going to believe nothing. But we can't pick and choose. If we say that these people did not handle this DNA evidence properly, we can't say that part of it is good and part of it is bad. You know, and so, it, you know, talking about the sweatshirt was moldy. Come on, y'all. You know, I mean, so the fact, and speaking of the sweatshirt, why is it that there was none of George Zimmerman's DNA from the sleeve, what is it, from the wrist all the way to the elbow? Why was
mm-hmm.
that the case? Why was there not, if you say this guy is smothering you, why does his fingernails or his hoodie from the sleeve all the way to the elbow not have your DNA on it? I mean, so my question, y'all, as we're closing out tonight, is if you're sitting in the jury box, and you've heard this week all the evidence that has been presented, is the defense able to rest this case, you know, to the point that they can say, listen, George Zimmerman did this? I mean, can they rest now and the jury be comfortable with that? What did they say, within a reasonable doubt? No,
they've already rested, so it's going to have to come down to those closing arguments today.
The prosecution. No,
she's talking about the defense.
Oh, the defense. No, the defense hasn't. I thought she was meaning the prosecution.
Yeah, the prosecution.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, no.
But I'm thinking it's going to have to come down to those closing arguments, because the prosecution's opening argument was so strong, especially for the defense to come in with a, and follow that with a knock-knock joke. So I'm thinking they're going to have a closing argument just as strong, just as intense to get a conviction for George Zimmerman.
I want you guys to give a closing argument. I mean, you know, you got the jury sitting in front of you. Everybody's heard the evidence. What would you say your closing argument would be to the jury tonight that would get George Zimmerman, I don't know. I don't want to say guilty because I sound biased. But, you know, I feel like he's guilty, y'all. I'm just going to go on the record saying that. But that doesn't mean my panel feels that way. So whichever way you feel, how would you present closing arguments to the to the jury so that they would be swayed to find him either guilty or innocent? Let's start with Aunt Dwayne, what would you tell the jury in closing arguments about George Zimmerman and this whole altercation between him and Trayvon Martin?
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Thank you. Yeah, my closing arguments would be, and I don't have this prepared, it's kind of off the top of my head, that George Zimmerman profiled him, followed him, tracked him down. I believe George Zimmerman was rolling through the neighborhood or creeping through the neighborhood with his lights off on his truck so nobody could see him. So he could flash his flashlights through the open spaces, and he looked creepy, you know. And I'm going to say any black kid who is privy to someone rolling down the street with their lights off knows what that possibly could mean. I need to run. You know, I need to get away. I need to fight for my life here. And I think that's what Trayvon did. He didn't know who this guy was, didn't know where he come from. Didn't have no identification on him, no identification marks. He just looked like some creepy guy or even a thug to Trayvon that was about to roll up on him. And that's kind of how I felt, you know, and that's kind of how I feel like Trayvon felt through this whole thing. The fight, I do believe that, you know, when we brought it up tonight that he was standing up, I don't think this fight hit the ground until Trayvon hit the ground. The shot went off really fast. You know, everybody was out of breath. Nobody had time to talk and discuss anything, you know, especially George, as much as he was running around the neighborhood looking for Trayvon, you know. In those two minutes, that's what he was doing, looking for Trayvon. And I don't know, I would kind of end it there. And I do believe George Zimmerman is guilty of this. I'm not quite sure the jury will see it that way because everybody is so for the law, you know, and they will preserve their law. They want to preserve this, you know, stand your ground law. Nobody wants their guns taken away. Nobody wants their rights to kill somebody taken away. That's why I think it's going to be hard to convict him, because it will change that law if he is convicted. Everybody will have to relook at that law and rewrite it, and I don't think nobody wants to do that. You know, and that's sad. I hate to say that because that's so sad, but that's kind of...
You might be right. Paul Beatty, how would you give a closing argument on this case?
None.
I'm sorry? No. Paul Beatty.
Sorry about that. I said I would start out by saying, well, I would look at each juror eye to eye, and I would say, our son has been killed. I'd tell him, I would say, we have a man who's claiming self-defense that a child, running scared, fearing for his life, thought that he was going to be harmed or injured, was cold-blooded, shot, beat, and failed by the entire Florida Police Department. We have a group of neighborhood watch people who are nothing but a bunch of hoodlums and organized thugs who are trying to maintain privileges that are not afforded to every red-blooded American. And I'm asking you today to send this thug, murderer, liar and cheat.
Ooh.
Jail for the rest of his life.
Ooh. All right. All right, y'all. Travis Schaefer, what kind of closing arguments would you give in this case?
I would tell the jury that George Zimmerman tracked down and attacked Trayvon Martin with his gun drawn, flashlight in his face. And there was no fight for his life, and therefore there was no fear for his life because he's the one that initially pursued and tracked down, Trayvon Martin.
Okay. Jay Cuervo, closing argument.
Closing argument. I think just like everybody else, I'm caught off guard. But I would first start off, and I'm going to buy a little bit from Zoe, and I loved your closing argument from the other day from Blake when you quoted Time to Kill. But first, I start off letting them know that, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, malice, ill will, and intent is not debatable. It's a fact. You know, as testified by Detective Serino, you know, we have our proof right there that George Zimmerman had the intent to go out there and to send a message to somebody, that he was a somebody. He was going to be the one to catch the bad guy that night. And, you know, we have a testimony from a young lady on the phone with this young boy who can account for those 2 minutes that George Zimmerman can't. I will go into detail about the major credibility issues with George Zimmerman, about his different accounts of different cases, and then I will switch it up on these, you know, because we have women, you know, white women and one Hispanic woman on this jury, you know, kind of people of privilege in a sense, if you want to speak like that. I will let them know. I would use the example that Zoe used earlier, Dr. Zoe, about, you know, ladies and gentlemen of the jury. Now close your eyes and imagine a young white lady, young white girl, 17 years old, running in the rain by herself in the dark, being chased by a man that she doesn't know. The man catches up to her. She has nowhere to go. Fending for her life, scratch and claw and kick him. And the man finds a way to pull out his gun, point it at her chest, directly at her heart, with the intent to stop it from beating.
Wow. Compelling, y'all. Kay Quinn, closing argument.
Well, I would just repeat all of the previous comments. I would repeat that, but I would also add that George Zimmerman just made a lot of wrong assumptions about Trayvon Martin, and his wrong assumptions cost Trayvon Martin his life. I would also look at the jury and say, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, listen, I am a black woman. I have black sons. I would hate to see the day that anyone can come and pick a fight with one of my sons, start to lose said fight, and then kill my son in self-defense. Because if you let this man walk today, that's going to be the law of the land. And it's not only for our children, but it can work on your in your behalf as well, because that means our sons can go and pick a fight with your sons and then claim self-defense. And we'll always have this State versus Zimmerman law to reflect back to. So that's what I would tell them.
Ooh. Okay, y'all, we're going to close out with Zoe Spencer. Zoe Spencer, closing argument.
Bring it home.
You know what? I would completely flip the script. I would say to the jury that this is not about George Zimmerman. This is about Trayvon Martin, and this is about people's perception about a black man. And I would say that the prosecution and the defense both brought to the stand witnesses who were more able to believe that a black man, a black boy, a 150-pound frail black boy, was an aggressor against a man who was versed in martial arts, versed in the law, self-defense, stand your ground, and was licensed and had a loaded with one in the chamber weapon on his side. And I would say that they want you to believe that this young man was the aggressor, and all of the witnesses who came forward are more focused and were able to more believe or conceive that this young black boy was a threat to George Zimmerman than it actually really was. And I would ask them, you know, you have to deal with your conscience. You have to listen to the tape, listen to it over and over again. You have to listen to the testimony of the mom. You have to listen to the testimony of Rachel Jontel, who was actually on the phone with him when the incident was happening. And then if you come out with your belief as well that this young black man was a threat, then you have to find George Zimmerman innocent. You have to acquit him. But if you understand and you take race and gender out of the equation, and then you look at the logic, and then you look at the people who were most closely related, and you find that he wasn't, then you have to find him guilty of second-degree murder. But I would take Zimmerman out of the equation and focus on what it is. It's a matter of criminalizing and villainizing black men.
Wow. Y'all, that's going to have to be the final word. Y'all, I have enjoyed the show tonight. I mean, I thank you, my panel, honest to God. You guys brought it home tonight. I'd like to thank Travis Schaefer, Zoe Spencer, Kay Quinn, Jay Cuervo, Antoine Wilson, and Paul Beatty. Thank y'all so much for being
thank
with
you.
Me. And the class out of
thank
Dallas.
You
thank
for
y'all
me.
For
her
tonight.
Thank
you so very much.
Thank
a reminder, y'all, that the views and opinions of our guests do not necessarily reflect that of Center Stage, the host, or our advertisers. Also, y'all, reminder, we are here each and every Friday night. This is what we do. Each and every Friday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Central, 9 to 11 Eastern. Join us right here every week as we cover topics just like this one. Again, thank you to my guests. Thank you to the audience for listening. And listen, I hope this show informs you about this case. Now you decide. Okay, guys, we got to get out of here and make way for somebody else that does what we do. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.